Welcome back.
Welcome back, Steve. So we got through that more technical module. Like, again, the temptation was certainly there to drop down straight into the technical things, and I avoided that, as I hoped and intended to do for this particular exam. So hopefully that was appreciated.
Yeah, I think so.
So where I left off was I was talking about...
customizing a process template.
Just getting stuck into the process template. So I'm going to actually throw that one over to you.
I would love to.
Fantastic.
This is one of the things I'm very passionate about. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think you should always customize the process template, especially if you're doing, you know, official Scrum, you may not want to make a lot of changes because sometimes people they add a lot of complexity to the process. However, there are times when it totally makes sense. For instance, if you wanted to tie your Scrum project to Microsoft Project, you would need to establish that integration in that field mapping file. So let's take a look at what that might look like. So first, let's look at what the study guide says. We need to be able to customize a work item, customize work item queries, potentially customize the team portal, identify areas and iterations and the like, and managing roles and associated permissions. I'm going to show you where those things are. This is not the TFS administration exam. So like when we talked about testing, the same sort of thing can apply here. You'll need to know these in detail for TFS administration, but for this particular test, you need to know the high level, what's possible type things. So what is a process template? It's the template that we use, or TFS uses it, when creates a new team project. So Scrum, Agile, or CMMI are the two key ones. It defines the workflow, the work item types, the queries, reports, a lot of things. And we choose the correct process template during that creation process. Now, the nice thing is we can create our own process templates if you like. You could create a Kanban process template if you. I'm going to throw in the K word again. although it might not make sense to have a Kanban process template, given that it's a process improvement methodology that sits on top of anything else. But it could be, right? It could be appropriate if you had your particular continuous flow or something. So while some aspects of a project can be changed after the team project has been created, not all can. And once you've created a project with a team process, with a process template, you can't go back and then change the underlying process template, or at least you can't without a great deal of work. So let's take a look at what the process template architecture looks like. I'm going to reflect it in slide first and then roll straight into a demonstration. So on the slide here, you'll see the process template composition is made up of these 9 basic areas. How build is run, classifications, I identify a couple things like security that we need to work with, groups and permissions, again, security, lab for lab management, reporting, what reports are available in each process template, test management, some extensions for test case management, version control, work item tracking, 2 key ones, and Windows SharePoint Services really provides the base templates for creating SharePoint sites or some of the things that gets uploaded there. You still have to have an STP file uploaded on your SharePoint site in order to get it to run appropriately. There's the new team project wizard, and that's used to create a new team project. And all of these things are basically a set of XML definition files. Was mentioned before, the 3 out-of-the-box templates at RTM were Scrum 2.0, Agile 6, and CMMI 6. They've now moved to 6.1 and 6.2 with each of the updates. And while the Scrum and Agile templates are pretty similar, the CMMI is a bit different. It's not necessarily waterfall-y, but it does take a different philosophical approach. We want to be able to capture enough data that we can then use that data to drive continuous process improvement. At level 3 CMMI, we're just really establishing kind of that repeatability. And at level 4 and level 5 especially, we're using it to take those metrics and improve our software process. All right. Quick notes, and you should already know these things, some notes before you begin. Plan your customizations. Don't just ad hoc things left and right. Plan them out a little bit. Don't be afraid to make changes. They're always reversible, but plan it out. Make sure you've got that thing in version control, for example, those sorts of things. Use a test TFS server or at least a test team project collection. All right, the customization process, we're just going to talk it through. And let's go. We've got some slides here. We're going to skip the slides and instead jump right into a demonstration of those. So I'm popping into here. And we're going to, instead of being here, we're going to fire up Visual Studio. And inside of Visual Studio, there's a couple things. You see here, I'm at home on CMMI. I can walk down to projects in my teams and connect to all these different teams. Or I can go down to settings. And in settings, I've got this Process Template Manager. I'm going to click that Process Template Manager, and it shows me all of the process templates that are on this machine. Now you can see I'm at 6.1, so I've got update 1. What we care about is really the 2.0, 6.0, and 6.0. I'm going to grab an example, the CMMI process improvement template, and I'm going to go ahead and download that. I simply click download and specify a location. I'm going to specify the desktop, select the folder, and it'll tell me that the process template is downloaded successfully. At this point, we can pop over to the desktop. And on the desktop, we see this nice little folder, MSF for CMMI Process Improvement 6.0. When we open it up, we have an XML file at the root, and then those other areas, those 9 areas we talked about earlier, where we can make changes to things like work item tracking, groups and permissions, etc. I want to focus this really not around the next test, the TFS admin guide, but just around this one. So let's rip open this process template. And you'll notice here there's a couple key areas here. It's got a name up here, MSF for CMMI Process Improvement 6. Let's call this My CMMI Template 1.0. I'm just going to rename my template up here. And I'll say the description, this template is for our formal projects requiring a framework for process improvement. And we'll just call that good enough right there. So you see I'm just kind of editing this XML. There's a group of plugins. Don't fuss with the plugins. Leave those as they go normally. And then the groups. These point to the separate sub-XML elements like classification, group of permission, WSS tasks, report tasks, work items, etc. We're going to ignore these. These are just how the stuff gets uploaded. Let's go ahead and save this. And now, as I pop into work item tracking, I'm going to make this, I'm going to pop into a type definition that we can see. So let me jump into, let's go with a requirement. And I'm going to go ahead and open this up with Visual Studio. That way we can kind of get a real good feel for the that's the power tools in Visual Studio, so I'm not going to open it up in Visual Studio. You can reopen it, but let's just open that inside of Notepad and then just blow this up just a bit so that we can see see it maybe a little bit more clearly. So inside of this work item type, this requirement work item type, we have a couple things. One is the fields element. And this is where we're adding fields. And there's just a couple things that we need to pay attention to. There's a lot of metadata around them, like the name. This is the requirement type, for instance, this field. It's got a ref name. And one thing to note is the name and the ref name have to both be globally unique. It's a string type, and it is reportable as a dimension. Remember, we have all this data that's captured. It flows from the transactional store into a data warehouse, from a data warehouse into an OLAP cube. And in the OLAP cube, this particular field will flow all the way through and become a dimension. You can also use measure, which is something that's counted on, I totally just blanked it. Anthony?
Measure, dimension, or... The third one.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Measure, dimension, detail.
Detail, thank you. I mean, if you select detail, measure and dimension go into the cube. Detail stops at the data warehouse. And if you leave it off, it's the equivalent of reportable equals none. Notice this field is required, and here's a list of all of the allowed values. We could add our own allowed values here if we wanted by just saying something along the lines of list item... value equals, we had feature, scenario, value equals risk. I don't know, risk is probably crazy, right? But we're going to throw in risk. So we made a little change here. And so that we can remember it, we'll call it the super duper risk. Right? That way, it won't look natural in a process template when we look at it. The default value is going to be functional. And this is how we can specify the fields. A lot of other things you can specify. We're not going to dive into all of those details. But suffice it to say that you will be studying this a lot more when you're looking at the TFS administration exam. But for this one, we've covered enough. Except for one area, I do want to show one more thing as I go up to the process improvement. And let's take a look at our field mapping file in classification. And this is the mapping file we talked about earlier a little bit, which is mapping from Microsoft Project to TFS. Now in CMMI, note that we have an awful lot of these mapping files. We don't have those mapping files like this many of them in Scrum or in Agile. And in Scrum, we have very few. So just a quick note on that for the field mappings. All right. Let's take this MSF for CMMI process. We can rename this folder if we want to, our stuff. Doesn't really matter what it's called. I could have left it that. Can't rename it until I...
PowerPoint?
Oh, no! We'll call it our stuff. I don't have to actually rename it, but... Oh, for crying out loud. Really? Really? What? Since I don't have to rename it, I have to try. Okay. Now it's out stuff.
I'm getting some comments on the chat window saying, can Steve do all the rest of the demos?
All right, so here we have our out stuff folder, and I'm going to fire this Visual Studio back up. And once it's fired up, let's go back into that process template manager, and let's upload that directory. I'm going to select that directory, the out stuff directory, and upload it. It's going to verify the upgrade process template, and you'll see that we have now a new one called My CMMI Template 1.0. At that point, I could make it the default if I wanted. Wouldn't have to, but I will, because wow, it's impressive. It's got a super duper risk.
Woohoo!
So at that point, we can go to Projects and Teams and create a new team project called Super Duper Risk CMMI. Next. And based off the My CMMI template, we can finish that up and let it create it in the background. There's a lot of other ways you can edit things. I love editing directly in XML. I don't know why. I think it's because I can do a lot of copy-paste. But another, maybe more convenient way is when this modal dialog goes away, there's a tools process template editor that I can use as well. It gives me a graphical way of editing these things.
So some of the other areas of customization, just while we wait for that to finish, you can also go in there and, you know, some of those agile planning boards that you've been looking at. So those agile planning tools where we didn't really dig into a lot of detail with them, but things like the backlog, where we use the quick add window, there's a lot of things in there that can be customized. We can go in there and we can modify those swim lanes, the states and the meta states behind it. So we can map physical states of the work item types and choose which ones go into to do, which ones define in progress, which ones are then, you know, a done definition. You can add extra columns there, extra swim lanes. So there is a lot of customization opportunity there as well.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. One quick thing, swim lanes, very powerful customization, not available in the first release, the RTM release. So for those of you taking the exam, just recall that it may not, you won't find any questions based on things that weren't introduced till update 1 and 2.
But
I love being able to customize that, and you certainly are going to want to do that.
Oh yeah.
Because if you do that now with update 2, you can get a very tailored Kanban board where you can track
your K-word.
Yes, it's very, very powerful.
All right. How's your team project work? I want to see if
your
team
project
worked.
Well, let's go see. I'm going to go into the work items and I'm going to create a new work item, this requirement type. And I want to do it a couple reasons. I only made a couple changes. They're one easy one. So let's enter a title, my title here. And you can see here it's proposed, the state is new, it's pending, it's committed. The type of risk is a super duper risk.
Okay? Wow.
So you can see that it's all entered in there. While we're here, let's just take a really quick look. Notice that the CMMI has an analysis tab where we could go and type some analytical work, link to storyboards, much the same, link to test cases. The other has some tags for subject matter experts that we can identify that we might want to get on the phone and call. These are people who might understand more about this. In addition, there's a schedule tab. Nothing's showing up here yet. If we pull it into project, you saw earlier how it pulled those things together. And we have attachments and links, which is kind of the same. So it's not radically different, but somewhat different.
Sure.
From some of the other ones. I think that's good enough to show that off. One more thing I do want to show, if that's all right, is I want to walk into a couple other team projects. First is the Agile team project. And inside the Agile team project, I want to go to a couple things. The work items that are available are bug, task, user story, issue, and test case. Mm-hmm. There's a few other hidden ones like code review request, code review response, feedback request, feedback response. But these are kind of the key ones that are visible that you would use.
Yes.
That's in Agile. In addition, when we look down inside of Agile to some of the documents that are stored on the repository, there's some key ones that we might use inside of an iteration for things like issues and triage. So the two documents that you have available are a way to track issues in your project and triage that project. Those are primarily the two that are going to be available inside that iteration. And now if we go back out to look at the, let's go to Scrum. Take a quick look at the Scrum one. From the documents portal, we have no shared documents. Right? Almost all of the artifacts are right here live with us today. If we go up to the work items and we take a look at the work items, you'll find that we have bug, task, product backlog instead of user story, and then an impediment and a test case. Very, very similar to the MSF Agile one, but a little bit behaviorally different. I don't know if it's important for the test, but bugs and product backlog items in the Scrum template both sit at the product backlog level and they're prioritized against one another. In the Agile template, they do not. Only user stories are prioritized by default. And bugs have the equivalent of tasks. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a different philosophy of thinking behind those things. And lastly, let's take a quick look at CMMI just so we can take a look across the three major ones. And inside CMMI, when we looked at the new work item, we've already talked through some of these, we have bug, task, requirement, and then the change request for requesting a change, because in CMMI, you might want to track scope creep. Mm-hmm. It's the only one that has a scope creep report. Issue review for a formal code review or formal review, not just of code, but of anything. It's a meeting we all get together and do. A risk and a test case. So again, the only one with a risk as well. Inside of the CMMI template, we also have some documents. And in project management, we've got several different shared documents, things like development project plan, which is an actual project file. That project file is already linked. Test development plan, another project file, issues and triage as well here. And then you've got, of course, some general documents like risk categories and sources and MSF for CMMI reference document, et cetera. Lots of different things that you can use to help you achieve your CMMI level 3. I think that kind of wraps that walkthrough. I thought it was important that we hit kind of those key elements as to what is available. They all also have a lot of Excel reports, which have some very interesting things there as well. All right.
Excellent. Back to the slides. I think we've got one slide left.
Yeah, is it even worth going back to the slides? I suppose it is.
It's our best bet.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's our best bit. It's the, because you know what? I killed PowerPoint at the end of it. Where am I located? I don't have that one. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to pass it back to you. I had it. I killed PowerPoint again, evidently.
You couldn't kill it before.
I couldn't kill it before.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Let me jump in there. I'm sure I can track that down pretty quickly.
Oh, sorry. I was in a remote desktop session. Oh, la la. All right.
Would you like to do this?
I'm not sure. All right. Exam best bets. Well, you don't need to know the specifics of all the things we talked about, like the quality tools, et cetera. Know what they are, what value they offer, kind of what problems and issues they solve. You mentioned it perfectly earlier. Don't beat your head against the wall learning every little detail, where to right-click, what command line parameters are, not for this exam.
No.
You don't need to know everything about process template customization, but that it can be customized. I think that's good. Any other exam best bets?
Not that I can think of for that particular module there. I think with the overlap with some of the other topics, overlap with some of the content we're about to show in the next module, I think we've got it well covered.
Awesome. That wraps this module. We're on to our last module. And this was kind of a quick wrap-up after the break. So I don't think we're taking a break here. We're going to just drive straight on through.
Absolutely.
Is that
right.
Correct?
That is certainly correct.
All right, let's do
all
it.
Right. Okay, so across to my screen now. So in this particular module, now we're going to move into integrate development and operations. The module overview, we want to implement an automated deployment process, implement pre-production environments, manage feedback between the between development and operations, and troubleshoot some production issues. So what the study guide says here, for this first topic, architecting an automated build and deployment workflow. That's a little different. When we talk about continuous integration, automated builds, that's okay, but now we've thrown in this whole deployment story. We want to then look at integrating automated tests and automating deployment into both test and production environments. So I'm going to roll that into the next topic. Okay, so implementing pre-production environments. So rolling that together, we're going to have a look at automating the creation of virtual test lab environments and then automated deployment to those environments. So a little bit earlier, I went to Steve's place and took a photo of his PC. So have a quick look at his desk there. So he's nice and busy. Now, what's on his machine? You'd be surprised. So on the developer's machine where we're busily working, we have all sorts of things. You know, it's a miracle that anything doesn't work. I mean, we've got assemblies there for everything under the sun. To protect your privacy, I did find some inappropriate things and I had to censor something down the bottom there.
Well appreciated.
No worries. I just didn't think they should be on the slide. This is what a developer's machine may look like. They've got a wealth of tools that are on the machine. Beta versions of this, pre-release versions of that. What does production look like? Yep. Production's quite different. You know, production, hopefully production is very different. you know, the machines have been built with a server SOE, not the developer SOE. Often it's now breaking the application across onto multiple machines. So where a developer had all layers of an N-tier application working on their machine, now we're splitting those across multiple physical machines, or virtual, doesn't really matter there. We could have firewalls between those. We could be controlling the type of communication between the various layers. There's controlled patching on those machines, whereas we may just have Windows Update just running amok on a developer's machine.
Running amok. I love it.
So that's a technical term. It must be an Australian term. There are server hardening scripts here. So scripts that will go in and will automatically go and disable non-critical functionality to reduce the attack surface of these machines. Now, these are things that generally don't happen anywhere near a developer's machine. And then finally, the last thing that I've listed there is, you know, load balancers. So, you know, we could be switching between particular web front-end machines, you know, things that could impact our application that we wouldn't have found on a developer's machine. On a developer's machine, well, all of our state information for the web application is running in process. But of course, then when we go into a load balanced environment for production, managing the state for those web applications suddenly becomes a lot more challenging. So I just want to highlight then the disconnect between, you know, it works on my machine, developers, and what it looks like and, you know, is it going to work when we hit production? Big differences. I want to talk about the lab management workflow then. So in terms of lab management, this is something that for the exam you haven't got to be an expert in driving it through, but this really does deliver, or this technology is critical to a few of those final exam preparation topics. So with lab management, we can do a build, we can restore virtual machine environments, and those environments can be not just a single machine, they can be a stack of 15 machines. It can be clustered database server, middle tier boxes, a couple of load balanced web front end machines, and a raft of clients. So we can really do a great job of, well, I was going to say simulating prod. We can use the exact same build scripts for those servers as we would use for production servers. So it shouldn't be close to prod. It should be a mirror image of prod in most regards. So we can restore that environment. We can automate the deployment of the application out there. We can take a snapshot of the entire environment post-deploy so that we can very quickly and easily get back to that post-deployment step. And that's great because all of the tests that we do change the test data. They change the state. So between executions of certain tests, we want to be able to make sure we can get back to a known state. We run those tests, and then we want to be able to sort of, you know, rinse, wash, repeat as often as we need to. Two types of environments supported in 2012. So we have system center virtual machine environments. And these are, you know, certainly by my thinking, the most versatile. We can do automated deployment to these. We can do execution of both manual and automated tests there, automated data collection. We can do automated startup and shutdown of those machines and use snapshots to revert to different states quickly and easily. The idea of network isolation is great. So I worked with a customer in Victoria, back down under, and they basically had a seven-server stack for testers. They had three testers. And the challenge of that was when one tester is doing tests, the other two couldn't touch the machines. Because a test that tester one is currently executing, if tester two goes and starts working with that sample data, starts making some changes, it could affect the results of the test tester one was doing. And it was constantly happening. So the net result was, while tester one is running and executing their tests, testers two and three, well, they can't really do anything. Work on some other tests, write some more tests, just stay away from the environment. So, you know, that's horrible in terms of productivity. Yeah. So by using an SCVMM environment with lab management, you can create your seven machine stack, and you know what? You can just check a checkbox. And that network isolation allows us to bring up a second and a third duplicate of the entire stack. Now, you've got to have resources to do that. You've got to have disk space. You've got to have room on the Hyper-V hosts in terms of memory and everything like that. Let's be very clear. But with those things in place, we can bring up duplicates of the entire environment stack without concern for naming conflicts, for having multiple domain controllers, multiple SQL instances, all, you know, conflicting with each other. Really great feature. No support for physical servers. I mean, it's an SCVMM environment. It does require Hyper-V as your virtualization provider, so no support for VMware or other virtualization providers. 2012 brings out a standard environment. And as a standard environment, we treat the machines as just physical machines. So there's no automated startup or shutdown, no snapshots, no network isolation, but we can go out there and we can basically, any machine that we've got rights to get access to, well, that can become part of a standard environment. So that can be physical machines. Technically, it can also be machines on other virtualization providers. We don't take advantage of that virtualization stack, but we treat it as just another machine. So we can push our agents out onto it. We can then go and do a deployment out there, but we can't take snapshots and revert back easily, not out of the box. Okay, so two types of environments there.
So if I was to want to use a VMware stack,
yes.
I would then just use my own machines, my own test machines that were already there, and I'd have to deploy. I would then just deploy onto those machines.
Yes, so as a standard environment, you can still deploy out to them, but the built-in capabilities of that lab workflow will not snapshot them, will not do network isolation for you. Entirely correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So a lab environment. So what is this lab environment? Because, I mean, it comes up quite regularly through those exam criteria. A lab environment is a collection of virtual or physical machines which you can use to develop and test applications. It can contain multiple roles needed to test multi-tier applications, workstations, servers, database servers, any of those things. And you can use a build, deploy, test workflow with your lab environment to automate the process of exactly that, building, deploying, and running those automated tests. I've worked in many different organizations over the years, and you know, I've come across many different instances where we've had, you know, the test environment, and then the UAD environment, and a staging environment, and a production environment. In some of those circumstances, those environments were created a number of years ago. And you know what, over time, they all become different. So anything that we test in one of the lower regions, when we deploy to the next level up, well, there's no guarantees it's even going to work. Because, you know, a year ago, some well-intentioned IT support folk RDP'd in there and changed things in the metabase, an old version of IIS or something like that. So then it breaks. Then we have to go and make more changes uniquely to that region, then deploy to the next one. Same thing happens. So instead of having these long-running regions that are gradually getting more and more different, let's change that mentality. Let's go and flush them away every night. That horrifies many of my customers, the idea that, we're not really sure we could deploy all of those applications again and make them work. A lot of those staff have moved on. Wow, what a horrible admission to make. So let's change that. Let's say, well, I'm going to go and grab the UAT region and I'm going to destroy it at 1 a.m. every day. And then I'm going to redeploy every one of my applications.
I have to say, I love that idea.
Yeah.
And I love it for a lot of good reasons. And one of the reasons that I really appreciate blowing away the environment and replacing it is because you're replacing it from version control,
yeah,
or from a script. And what that prevents is people who, they didn't quite work, so they rushed out and they quick added that stored proc, right? They just jammed in the stored proc into QA, and it tests just fine. Everybody loves it, and then boom, off they go to prod where it fails.
Yes.
So blowing it away, pulling it from version control, means you get this design pattern with which is, if it ain't in version control, it never happened.
Perfect.
And I like that.
And I think it's just a great strategy there. And you know what? We actually then become very good at deploying our apps.
Yes.
We socialize them all the time. We're deploying them every single night. And I love what you said there at the end. If you want to get a change in there, well, you put it into your version control. Yes. We version control our deployment scripts. If you need the stored proc changed, do it in version control.
Yes.
And then it goes out to every one of those regions as required.
And if you need to make a modification to your firewall, it's done in the script that's checked into version control and executed during your deployment.
So think about your disaster recovery. If one of these machines in production, you know, absolutely fries, well, that's not as big a concern as perhaps it was, because we just have this, you know, we have confidence and faith that we can rebuild, we can redeploy those applications out there. You know, it's not quite the panic that it was before, perhaps.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So SCVMM environments. So going back into lab now for a moment, reproduce machine configurations. So collections of VMs that are configured to recreate typical production environments. I can create libraries there of machines configured in certain ways, ways perhaps for our customers. So, you know, customer X is having some challenges and problems. So we've got an environment that matches customer X, and I can quickly and easily spin that up. I can reproduce the exact conditions of a bug very easily, and I'll show you that in a workflow a little later. We can run multiple copies of the environment at the same time. There's just so many benefits. So the SCVM environment with that dependency on System Center Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V, well, it is certainly the richest option and choice that you've got there. Some supported operating systems. So this is maybe an Achilles tendon here. So the SCVM environments are all well and good, but remember the dependency on Windows Hyper-V server. So you can really only work with operating systems that you can spin up and use inside Hyper-V. Okay? And then we've got to think about the ability for our agents to be installed on these OSs. So it's not the best solution there for going, you know, cross-platform at this stage. All right, let's get into a demo. So as an end-to-end demo, this is a demonstration of the of build, deploy, and test. Now, this is actually a lab that Brian Keller provides on his virtual machine, for those of you that haven't seen it. So I'm going to go reasonably quickly through there. Again, for the exam, you don't need to know every one of the steps you're about to see. Absolutely not. But having an appreciation for what lab can do for the virtual machine environments, for knowing that this is a solution for rapidly creating those environments, for storing them, for doing that automated execution of automated deployment, and then automated execution of tests, that, I think, is very, very important for the exam. Would you agree?
I would.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's get in there and do a demonstration. So for the purpose of this, try that again. Actually, you know what? I'm just going to get rid of the PowerPoint. See, getting rid of PowerPoint is easy, Steve. So I'm just going to go in here, and I've got two machines.
And look at they panned to both of us when you say that, right? Just, I know. Just to get my expression.
That little barb, the little stab. Now, I say that about to do one of the most technically complicated demonstrations we can, and I'm throwing barbs over. What's wrong with me? So I've got two virtual machines here. We're going to call them friendly, blue and, well, green, or maybe not as blue.
Turquoise.
Turquoise. Oh, wow. That's excellent. Okay. So the blue machine here is going to be a multitask machine. This machine over here, Mr. Turquoise, I'm just going to call him green. Mr. Turquoise is where we're going to actually deploy the application, and we're going to run our tests over here. I'm going to go over here and let's have a quick peek in Visual Studio. I'm going to go into my test controller configuration tool, and what we're going to see in here is that I've specified the account that we're going to use for running the test controller service. I've gone in and I've registered the test controller with the Team Project collection. Now I've got a choice here. I can either use it by registering it with the Team Project collection, or if I want to do load tests, I've got to go in there and unregister it. So you can only really task this particular test controller for either running load tests or for doing the testing that we're about to do. So I won't make any changes there, but I just wanted to point out where that controller is and that it is pre-configured for us. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to create a new standard environment. Okay, so let me just exit out of there, and I will exit without saving it. So in terms of creating those environments, I'm going to pop into MTM to do that. One of the things that I've found in terms of creating these environments, a lot of the time that is lost is process time. So if I want to create a new environment, it might require me to go in there and talk to the IT support folk and say, hey, I need these new VMs created. And their SLA, you know, a couple of days. And then I've got to talk to the database guys and ask them to go and deploy database changes, a couple of days. Then there's a domain controller inside the lab environment that I'm using, and I need a number of accounts pre-created with certain configuration. So the security guys, it's a couple of days there. Once that's done, then the developers can perhaps do the deploy if that's their job, or the release manager. There's just, it's all of those things that add up, and that's where a lot of time is lost. So we want to be able to try and do a self-serve environment if we can. Now I've gone into MTM here, and so far when Steve opened this earlier, we were looking mostly at the testing center. I'm going to change that now, and I'm going to switch across to the lab center. This is something that a tester can do. We can go in there and I can say, well, I want to create a new environment. At the moment, it knows that I'm not registered with System Center Virtual Machine Manager, so standard environment is my only choice. I'm going to go and provide a name there, and I'm going to call this the Fabricam build deploy test environment. And I'll say next. I'm going to go and add a machine. Now the machines that I'm going to use here for a standard environment are just machines I've got to be able to get to on the network. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to say that the machine name is VSALM2. And then I'm going to choose a role for it. And in my particular example, the role is going to be a web server. I'm going to want to use a local machine account called Adam in this case to run those tests, and I'll go and provide the credentials that we need there. And I'll click next. Now, I want to point out that we could be adding many machines here. I could create, you know, quite a number of them. I could have two web servers that I want to run as clustered machines, and I can put them both in a web server role if I wanted to do that. If it was truly an SCVMM environment, I could specify the machine names, I could specify the amount of memory on them. I've got a lot more control and flexibility there with what I want to do. I'm then going to go in and under advanced, I'm going to say that I want to use this test controller, so it already knows that from the one that's been registered for us. I'm going to say that I want to configure that environment to run UI tests. Now that means that the agent can't run as a service, it's got to run in process. As a process so that we get a UI and things can happen. So I'm going to say I want to run the UI tests on any machines in this role. Okay, so that was the role that I defined or created a moment ago. Yep. So that could be one or it could be more than one machines. I'm going to go in there and tell it also just to use the Adam account, and I'm going to provide the credentials there that I want to use.
What are those credentials?
They're highly secure.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Thank you for that obviously value-added question. So I'm going to click next there, and let's go and verify those settings. Now, one of the really neat things, if you've tried to use Lab in 2010, you have my sympathy.
Yeah, it was hard going.
It was getting all the ducks to march perfectly in step, and you know they never did. It was horrible. They've really done some great work in 2012, and they've taken away a lot of the risk, a lot of the challenges in 2012. So what we've done there is we've gone and looked for a number of opportunities there for problems and found that none of those exist. So the magic happens here the moment I click finish. What this is going to do now is it's going to go out to that other machine, the one sitting over here. It's going to go and, you know, do some prep work. It's going to go and push the agent onto that machine. Now, if you've done this in the past with 2010, going and installing three agents onto there, setting all of the properties of those agents successfully and correctly, pulling them back into SCVMM, having them stay there, it was hard work. It really, really was. Creating those golden images, wow.
Can I jump in just with a quick...
As long as you let me say, watch just here.
Okay.
So while Steve's about to talk, we're installing that test agent.
Automatically.
Hands off, you know.
I do want to have one caveat. I had my host machine. I was running my VMs in a separate machine and hosting my TFS server in my box.
Yeah.
And using the other VM machine to run all this stuff and then deploy to my host box. I learned that when it automatically deploys the test agents, it, for your convenience, will uninstall Team Foundation Server. So immediately upon deploy, that was a bad demo. You can't recover from that. It pops up and says, now uninstalling TFS. And it was like, ah! And then, of course, it fails with can't communicate with TFS. But
yeah. Well, there's a couple of interesting things. So when this finishes pushing that agent out there, what's it going to do? It's also going to automatically reboot that machine.
Oh.
So when you're doing your demos and you decide that it's really, really clever, you're just going to push the agent onto the Hyper-V host, that's a bit of a problem when it auto-reboots it. It's like, ooh, didn't anticipate that at
all. Right. And since I never got there, because it installed TFS and I was frantically Control-Alt-Deleting, trying to kill that process too.
Oh, yeah. So just have a look in the background there at exactly what happened. Let's just switch back there. While Steve and I were talking, it pushed the agent across. It configured the agent for us. It restarted that other machine. This is good.
You see it restarting. Yeah. You can actually watch it.
This is good and bad news. People used to pay me a lot of money for a long time to do this. That done me out of a job. Okay, let's be very clear. It wasn't a fun job.
No,
it was horrible.
It was not a fun job.
I was like the last man standing. And you think, double my rate. And then everyone else still disappears. It's like, I'm going to have to do this work. So it's done that install for me. It's done all the configuration for me. It's verified the settings before it did it. It's rebooted that machine in the background. They've just done an extraordinarily good job there. Now, this is only one machine. This could be an entire stack of machines that this is all working on.
Yep.
So that setup there is just, you know, just impressive. Okay, we'll just give that a second. It's just toying with me now, Steve.
I think so.
It's saying, you don't know if this is going to work or not work.
And I waited and had a good story to tell. I could have stretched it out. It actually was on somebody else's machine, not mine.
Oh, was it?
It was even worse. I had to take him out to a nice steak dinner because I had to rebuild their box. But that was Jeff Levinson. And again,
couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Hey, Jeff. Now I'm just a little nervous.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these deployment steps that you're going through. And one of the things you really want to get for this, to take away from this, is that it's not enough to simply compile your code. You need to deploy that code out to an environment, test that environment, and then potentially roll back to a snapshot and do it all again, and do it all again, and do it all again, and do it all again. Like you said, the more times you deploy, the more comfortable you are with that deployment process. And I'll tell you what, if you've done it in dev and test 300 times, going to production is no big deal.
And that's how it should be. For how many of you is the idea, if we're going to do a deployment on Friday, how many of you think, no, that's horrible news?
That's my whole weekend.
Exactly. Let's cancel our dinner plans. Let's plan on being in here over the weekend. For many people, the whole idea of production releases is scary.
Yeah.
So let's switch back to my machine. And in the background, some other things have been happening there. So I'm reluctant to touch anything, but see that little window in the back?
Yep.
So what's happened down here is the test agent has been deployed for us. The test agent has been configured. We've told it that we need an interactive process. The agent's popped up there. The agent is now online and ready to go for us. I just think that's just extraordinary. The amount of pain that was before, it's just gone. That machine's now ready to be used. We're just over here, we'll just do a quick refresh, make sure. Yep, come on. He's just a bit reluctant to tell anyone that he's ready for the work. He's just enjoying a few quiet moments before we continue. Come on, ask him nicely.
They have made huge strides in 2012. If all of your experience has been with Visual Studio Lab Management in 2010, mm-hmm. you need to up some of that experience before taking at least the administrative exam, but probably also here as well, just a little touch up.
Yeah, well, you know it's there. We can see it. It gave me a false sense of confidence. The speed with which it actually pushed the agent out there was lightning fast. The reboot happens a lot faster than when I normally demonstrate it. So it gave me that false confidence and, there we go.
Ah,
all righty. Got nice. Over the line in the end there. Now, it's really bizarre. If that even worked in 2010, I felt really, really good. Now I'm complaining that it took an extra minute. How soon we forget that pain. So my environment's there. It's looking pretty good now. And I've got we could be talking 15, 20 minutes, where to do that without this technology may have been the process of days, if not potentially a week. So we're all good to go there. We've got an environment there. So I want to prepare for some automated testing now. So on our machine back over here, I'm going to go into Visual Studio. We'll fire up Visual Studio. And I'm going to go into the Fabric M Fiber Call Center application. In terms of the scenario, our testers have been busily working away. They've created their manual test. From the manual test, they created an action recording. We've then given the action recording over to the developers. The developers have created the coded UI test. So lots of activity has been happening behind the scenes. I'm going to go back into the Source Control Explorer. Let's go and find Fabric-M Fiber. There's our call center application. Let's go ahead and open it up. While it's opening up in Solution Explorer, I'll do a quick query. And I'm going to want to go and find, in this particular case, my test cases. I'm going to go and run that. And here's test case 79. So 79 was the test case that our manual testers have been diligently testing. And we now have a coded UI test that will to execute that in an automated fashion. Our manual testers have been doing it. They're very, very happy with it for now. So let's go back across to the Solution Explorer and simply do a quick rebuild. That looked good. So now with this test case, I'm going to go to my associated automation and I can go in there and now wire that test case up to the coded UI test that now fulfills that function, that test. I'll say OK. And this has basically taught this test case, this manual test, where to find the code and the type of test that we're talking about. OK, I'll scroll down there. Oops, up the top, should I say, and let's go ahead and save that change. Okay, good TFS, excellent. So I'm going to go back to MTM. I'm going to switch back across to my test settings. And in terms of my test settings, well, I've got some test settings in there for when I'm doing local test runs, but I'm going to say new now, and I'm going to say that I want to go and create a new set of test settings. I'll call this one Fabric-M Build Deploy Test Settings. Now this is going to be for automated tests. When I choose the roles, I'm going to say that this applies for any tests that that are running in the web server role. Now, of course, that's all we've had here, and it's a coded UI test, so it's a very logical choice. I can go into my data and diagnostics and I can choose what collectors to use. I can go and record test impact. I can get video off the screen, system information, the IntelliTrace logs. I can grab things out of the event if I want to do that. So for now, I'll just keep that nice and easy. There's lots of other choices that I've got there, but for now, I'm just going to say finish. So all I've done there is to create a my test settings to define what I want to go on while automated tests are occurring.
Okay. And one of the things I just want to capture and shout out to folks is while we're still just focused on your screen, is that as you're walking through this, kind of just be planting in the back of your mind that what's possible in these steps and the steps you're going through, not to remember the steps again,
correct,
but just plant what's possible in the back of your mind.
And that's exactly right. So thanks for pointing that out. Don't remember the steps, remember the capabilities. I like that a lot, particularly in the context of the exam. So what I'm going to do is duck back to Visual Studio now. I'm going to go back to my Team Explorer. Try clicking that again. I'm going to go into my builds, and I'm going to create two builds here. I'm going to go in and say that I want to create new build definition. And this particular build definition is going to be my Fabricam Fiber Dev branch build. Try that again. Dev branch build. I'm going to go across to my trigger for that. And in this particular case, I'm just going to say that I want to use a manual trigger for this one. In terms of my process, I'm going to put the outputs of this build into VSALM / FF drops. That's my drop folder. I'm going to go into the advanced settings here and I'm going to disable tests. Now, this is going to simply build the application. Okay? I don't want to run the tests here. I want to build it, I want to deploy it, and I want to run those tests once it's deployed, not on build. Okay, so just a little bit different there. I'm going to save that build definition. So to be clear, all this particular build is doing is going in, grabbing the application, compiling it, dropping the outputs into FF drops, and not worrying about any tests. So the output of that is simply that we'll have the application built and now sitting in a folder. I'm going to create another build definition, but this build definition is going to build, deploy, and test. And this is one of those workflows enabled through the use of lab management. Now, in terms of build, deploy, and test, again, it's going to be a manual trigger. I'm going to go into my build settings, and this is going to be a little bit different. With my build settings, firstly, it doesn't output to a drop folder. I'm going to go back to my process, and instead of the default template, I'm going to go and choose the lab default template. When I choose the lab default template down here for my process settings, that now allows me to go into this screen here. This is where some of the magic happens. I click next. Firstly, what environment? So here's the environment that it knows about, the one that I created earlier. Now I can't revert to a specific snapshot because it's a standard environment, not SCVMM. But I could, if there were a number of snapshots, choose one. I want the snapshot with no sample data, the snapshot with a month of sample data, 2 months, 6 months of data, whatever I've got set up and available to me. I'm going to go and say that I want to use this build definition, and I'll go and queue one of those builds, please, and use the outputs of that to go and deploy. I want to deploy the build. So in terms of deployment, there's many different ways we can deploy an application. We can use MS Web Deploy, we could use a PowerShell script, we can use a batch file, we can use just a simple Xcopy if you want to do that. When I click on Add, I can then choose the particular machine roles and I can either use the name of the machine or the roles. Now, roles are certainly much better. If we've got multiple web servers here, I can say I want to go and do this onto any machines in that role or specific ones, my choice entirely.
Right up to a web farm.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of that, the actual deployment script that we're going to use is stored in the version control system. So I'm going to go to the build location, and there's a folder called deploy, and there's a little batch file there called deploy.bat. I'm going to use that, and it takes just a single argument, And the argument that it takes is where that build location is. So I'll put the build location in there. Now, I could go and add many more things. I could say, go and, for any machines in the database server role, I want to go and call SQL CMD and do a manual deployment out there. So you've got a lot of control over what happens just here. And then finally, I want to run some tests once this is deployed. So we've got the application deployed out there. I can choose my test plan. I can choose the test suite. I can go and choose the test settings file, and I'll say finish. So a little bit, certainly a lot going on there. I'll hit save to save that now. The good news is a lot of what you just saw there was setup time. A lot of that stuff does not need to be done anymore at all. So what does it look like? How do we trigger this? Whenever I want this to work, all I need to do is go and choose the Fabricam dev, oops, no, the build deploy test build definition. I'll right click on that and I'm just going to say queue a new build. I'll go down here and say queue. Now I get nervous. I get really nervous after the success of some of the demos today. What this is going to do is my call to that particular build is now going to go and trigger build of the Fabricam Fiber dev branch build. So that's going to go and get the sources out of TFS. It's going to build those sources. It's going to drop the output into that drops folder. The workflow then is going to go and pick those things up. It's going to run the... Actually, we could be watching some of this. It's going to run that batch file and deploy the application onto the machine in the background, the green machine. Once that's deployed, it should then automatically go and run my coded UI tests. Now, one of the really interesting things is while I've manually chosen to trigger this, it could be something that I set up to run at 1 o'clock every morning. So at 1 o'clock every morning, we might go and provision the environment that we need. We might go and do the build. We might go and automatically deploy it into that environment. In that environment, we can then go and run all of our coded UI tests. And then if there's any failure there, I've collected a wealth of information and I can make that available for my developers and testers in the morning to find out exactly what's going on there. Okay, go, 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 little guy.
So in this case, it does have to, that build deploy test will of course call the other build.
That did the actual build.
Does the actual build, take the drop from that and run it. Another thing you can do is you can always point it to any successful prior build and have it just grab that one and run it. Of course, then you don't get any changes you might have just made that make it appropriate for a demo. But that's a nice capability. So that means that testers, when they kick it off, can say, I want that build.
Exactly.
I want this old build deployed,
so if
not
we want
just
to go back,
the latest build.
Sorry. So if we want to go back there and validate some particular bug that we have in production, we don't have to get the latest as I've done here. You're entirely correct. I can go and say, go and grab the last production build, please quickly push that out to these machines so I can try and repro some production bugs that are coming in. So that's entirely correct, Steve. So this is going and doing that build in the background. Yeah, it's taking a little while to do a build that isn't actually that big. I'm just wondering how much time I'll give that.
Do you have any more slides? Because we can always pop back if it's something that...
Well, see, the challenge with that, and I did think about that, was for this to work, what the end game is over here on the green machine. We really want to see...
Oh, yeah, you want to see it popping up and showing the...
Yeah.
Yep.
So, see down here? We really want to see what's going on here. We want to see the status show that we're deploying the application. We want to see the test start. We want to see the Fabricam Fiber web application flash up on the screen. We want to see the coded UI test execute. We want to see it shut down. We want to see it show success and pass. So if I bring some slides up, the risk of us actually missing that, it's a lot of work then to take the finale away.
That's true.
Although I do feel quite confident in saying the finale could be an interesting crash. I hope I did all those steps correctly.
One of the things we could do is I could also host the PowerPoints, and as soon as you see it pop up on that, that's getting risky.
So while that's just happening in the background, the next slides are basically talking about collecting information in production. So that whole DevOps story. So Steve, are you familiar with Microsoft System Center family of tools?
Yes, I am.
So we don't want to deep dive into each of those specifically, but as far as the DevOps story goes, is it convenient for you? You know, what are some of those tools that we might talk about in System Center?
System Center, I really like the fact that in System Center you have the operations manager that allows tickets to flow back and forth. Unfortunately, that's not part of the exam yet, because it's the new thing that released after the exam, so it's an update type feature. But from a knowledge standpoint, the people here should know about System Center, Operations Manager, and the integration with TFS. It's something worth looking up. It looks like you're going to want to jump back to this BDT.
Okay, so having poked fun at Steve for the success of his demonstrations, the Karma gods have really come back and really just nailed me. And what have I done there?
This is a very complicated demo, unlike just trying to close PowerPoint.
And, you know, no one is going to believe me that the last 20 times I've done that demo, it's worked every time. No one is going to believe that for a second. And, guys, you know what? I'm not going to troubleshoot it in the time we've got.
Well, I have a quick question. Where could they find this demo to do it on their own?
Absolutely. So Brian Keller created these VMs that we've been using and demonstrating today. They are freely available for download from the Microsoft website for the purpose of trial and evaluation. So what I normally do is just pop into Bing and do a keyword search for Brian Keller MSDN blog or some such thing. That just takes you to Brian's blog. I pop in there and, you know, you can download the VM. Now, remember, the VM is full SQL, full TFS, full Visual Studio. It's got Office on there. It's got sample applications on there. It's a multi-part RAR file that I think is going to be around at least 10 gig. And then when you expand that out, it's probably going to jump up to well over 40 gig is my guess.
Or it's at ALMVM.
Oh, fantastic. That's even easier.
And it just redirects right to the location where he has all of them you can download.
Fantastic.
So I'll go ahead and post that as part of the chat while you're still talking. I opened up.
Excellent idea. A little bit disappointing there that, of course, that failed. All we really wanted to see was a web application fly up on the screen here post-deploy and see that coded UI test go and execute. So I'll have to find out exactly why that was the case. So it's going to be something that I've done almost definitely, because that demo is old faithful. Or it was old faithful. As soon as the presentation is finished today, it's getting a new name that won't go on the video recording. All right. Okay. So I wanted the consistency with some of your demos, mate.
Does it that's right. Made it consistent.
Make it someone else's fault? It can't be mine.
But we can take you there with hand-wavy gestures. Realistically, what would have happened is, on that other demo, you would have seen something pop up, it being an IE browser,
Fabricam,
and start stepping through Fabricam, click, 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 and then a report back to the other VM that says, bingo, all these tests passed, everything looks good, and you've deployed your application. So I took you all there vicariously.
Yours was so much quicker than mine, too. All right, so if we go back, I want to talk about, Steve, you're going through System Center family of products. I've got a list of them there. Would you like to continue?
Wow, you've got them. Yes, the Microsoft System Family Center. Configuration Manager, not really a tie-in with what we talk about with ALM, although it can be used to auto-deploy some machines and keep them configured just right. So I don't want to write it off yet. It just doesn't have that tight integration with TFS directly. The Data Protection Manager, Endpoint Protection, just not something that integrates really well. Operations Manager, Service Manager are right there, as well as the Virtual Machine Manager. And that Virtual Machine Manager is what you would use if you're using, of course, lab management across the whole System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, the powerful version of lab management. One thing that I didn't call out here specifically is Orchestrator. Orchestrator used to have a great CodePlex project, and it's probably still there, to help integrate TFS and some things that happened inside of System Center. Mm-hmm. Now that orchestration is no longer a part of kind of the formal Microsoft provided integration, which is the the Operations Manager integration.
So that's pretty much the family there. In terms of the exam, you don't need to be familiar with all of those sorts of things, but I'd want to be able to list maybe 5 or 6 dot points on what each of those things are, particularly the ones that Steve called out.
Yeah.
You want to be able to go in there and rule anything out. So while you mentioned Orchestrator there, well, that's unlikely to really be in the ALM story. So
yeah
we'll lob that one away. And I think you did a really good job of summarizing the rest of those.
Sure. I think that the not the service manager, but the operations manager, because that handles some of the tickets that flow in and out and in and out, and that those tickets can flow directly back to Team Foundation server and be changed there and passed back. Although, to be fair, that's not to later updates, so probably shouldn't mention it.
All right, so the final topic there, production issues. So gathering defect data from bugs in a production setting, providing actionable data to the development team, and managing incident response times collaboratively. In moving through that, this is going to be a very quick touch on a technology that's, you simply really need to know the role and name of it. So I'm going to go through those slides very, very quickly. So the typical problem that when a bug is found, typically developers need to spend and invest quite a lot of time reproducing the environment so that they can repro the bug so they can find out what's going on. And there's a lot of set breakpoints, step, those kinds of things. Now, in terms of the find and fix time for a bug, that find time usually far exceeds the fix time. We can spend 6 hours looking for it, and then the find, when we finally get it, well, we just have a one-based loop instead of a zero-based loop. Click fix. It's not generally that easy, but comparatively, the find time far exceeds the fix time. So anything you can do to aid in that find time or to reduce that find time is going to be a great overall win for the team. All right? So the thing we're talking about is IntelliTrace. Okay, think of it like a personal DVR for developers. So it records information about the debugger state as we execute the project. And that allows us to go in there. And it's like, I think before they gave it the name IntelliTrace, it was just known as historical debugging because that's what it was. It was like having set a breakpoint in the past. And then we can fast forward and rewind backwards and forwards through it. It's an awesome capability. In terms of the workflow, though, very quickly, our tester is able to go in there and turn on that data collector. So while the testers are testing, we can be grabbing that state information. When they raise a bug inside MTM, we can also include that iTrace file, so that information gets captured. When the developer receives the bug, they get the iTrace file as well. They can simply double-click on it, and that's going to give them a wealth of information. And so long as they've got access to the PDB files, the symbols. Now, that's well supported in our build process.
Yep.
So long as they've got access to that, they can then go back and step through the code. They can hover over variables. They can look at the project execution as it was executing when the tester was testing. We haven't got to go and get the version of code. We haven't got to go and find a place to deploy it. We haven't got to go and set breakpoints and step through it. That's already captured. Now, that's an extraordinary benefit. And that was available in 2010. In 2012, we've got IntelliTrace in production. So using PowerShell scripts, we can dynamically load those data collectors in. Potentially, we could walk up with a USB stick, stick it into the production server, dynamically load the collectors that we need, collect the information, and unload it with zero downtime in production. Okay, that's an enabling capability there. So pretty impressive. So in terms of your best bets for this one, make sure you know the role of lab management and what it offers a team. You don't have to be able to go and configure everything that you saw there, but I'd want to know some of the key build definition settings for both default and lab default templates. Know that I can go in there and set values to help me deploy my applications there. And I'd probably be able to just identify the key responsibilities for some of those main System Center products. What do you think, Steve?
I think that's exactly right. You also just want to think about why you want to speed these deployments.
Mm-hmm.
You want to speed these deployments predominantly so you can lower your cycle time, get feedback up front, those sorts of things. Again,
awesome.
Just that mindset.
All right, well, that's the end of that module.
I say because we're so close to the end, we've got a wrap-up module. Mm-hmm. Should we just dive right into the wrap-up?
Let's get it done.
All right.
Okay. Have you got the slides there?
I do. So go ahead and...
Over to you.
Yes. Let me just quickly F5 that, and we're in. All right. Let's wrap it up. Module overview here, some general test taking tips, probably some specific here, and some exam insurance.
Sounds great.
I love that, and other resources. So some test taking tips. Go ahead, Anthony, I'll let you fire first.
So some of the things that I spoke about there is create your gap analysis. Get the exam preparation guide, copy and paste that big list of things there, pop it across into Excel or into Word, and go and identify the things that you're really, really happy with and areas where you need to spend a little bit of time. I'd also suggest that you definitely want to set, book your exam. Life is busy for all of us. It's easy to say, I haven't got time, and everything else suddenly becomes more of a priority. So one of the things that I'd suggest there is say, well, look, I've done my gap analysis. I'm able to estimate the amount of study I need to do. So I'm going to book the exam 3 weeks from today. So get that into the schedule. And you know what? You tend to force yourself to prioritize things and to do the study you need. You can postpone it if you need to 24 hours before your exam.
No way.
Don't do it. All right. And then Steve's also going to tell you about a double shot offer.
Yes, absolutely. That's going to come up in just a bit. But my tips for the exam, mindset's everything for this particular exam. You got to keep the mindset. Think about agile and lean principles. That will get you through a huge chunk of this exam. Keep track of your sure thing answers. I always keep track of everything, every item that I'm absolutely positive I've gotten right. Mm-hmm. And if I get a big chunk of those right, then I feel a little more confident to kind of go crazy on some of the ones I may not have understood properly. Don't get wrapped up in this exam or any exam by kind of some of the technical details of the question. The question may not feel quite right. Exam writers are human and they go through a lot of review, but sometimes things slip through that feel wrong. Interpret them in a way that you think the exam author would have wanted the question to be written, and that gives you a better shot at getting the correct answer. And lastly, I love your idea about scheduling it out, mm-hmm. but I'm not a fan of prepping. the gap analysis thing, it's a good idea. It's a mm-hmm. really, really good idea. It's a nice, lightweight, very lean way to study. But with a double shot offer, which we'll be talking about in a moment, which is good till the end of May, somewhere into May, you can take an exam and fail it, and then just walk right back in and take it again. Now, if I had to drive 3 hours to take the exam, I'd study a lot, right? But the fact of the matter is, you can walk in, sit down, bomb the exam, know exactly where your gaps are, mm-hmm. walk back, study those, be back 24 hours later and pass the exam.
It certainly works.
And to do so, you get this exam insurance. And the exam insurance is right available here. It's called mm-hmm. Double Shot. And it's at http://microsoft.com. You got the thing right.
It's there.
And it says EN/US, second shot. And you know what? You're from Australia. Did you get that down there?
The last three exams I did here.
Oh, man, I just saw the ENUS.
I would be fairly confident it's down under as well.
I actually did these three exams
during the Build Conference in November last year.
Okay, excellent. So here's the step. You register, you schedule it, you take the exam, and then you retake the exam if you have to.
But like any insurance, you've got to get it before the exam.
You can't good point.
Fail and then go, I want the insurance now.
No pre-existing conditions
exactly.
on this piece of insurance.
Exactly.
Absolutely. All right. Other resources. The Professional Scrum Development with Microsoft Visual Studio 2012 book by Richard Hundhausen mm-hmm. really walks through the end-to-end. Now, this would be an overkill prep for this particular exam, mm-hmm. but, man, it's just a good book, too.
Agreed.
Yep. The Scrum Guide, which you mentioned, mm-hmm. and the Brian Keller VMs, which are available right here at this link.
Awesome.
Anything else that you would throw in?
Not really. If you haven't done an exam before, just get in and do it. Remember, it's unlike some of those uni exams, perhaps, where if you failed that final, then you've got to redo the whole semester again and all those sorts of things. I don't want to make light of it, not at all. But you know what, you can
not
basically get online, you can book that exam in, you know, it's going to cost a little bit of money. You can say, look, I want to try and do the exam a couple of weeks from now on a Thursday at 10 o'clock. Is there a seat available nearby? Book in, go and do it. And you know what, if you do fail, and I don't want to prepare people for failure, I mean, it hurts the hip pocket, it hurts the ego and pride just a little bit, let's be frank. You know, if this is the pass mark and you study, and you fail, it's altogether too often people, you know, we don't like failing, let's be clear. So you go away and it's all doom and gloom and your exam preparedness starts to go down. The things that you just had sitting on the edge of your memory start to disappear. You know, if you fail an exam, think about the questions that you marked for review, the ones that you weren't sure of.
The
ones that are going to that will have bitten you for sure. Go away, try and book within 2 days, book another exam. And then just prep just to get over the line. I mean, well, don't prep just to get over it. Prep to blow through the line. That's what I meant to say. Prep to blow through that line and get it over and done with. I mean, yeah, if you happen to fail an exam, and I've probably failed 3, it's really easy with a lack of prep. if you happen to fail them, it's not the end of the world.
Hurt
your hip pocket.
All.
Maybe not with a second shot offer.
Yep.
You're in business.
Absolutely. So I'd say go out there, take the exam. What we covered here, I feel was a pretty substantial coverage of the exam topics. Now that I've sat through this exam, I'd feel very comfortable going and retaking that exam again and passing it again. I think that what we've done is covered a fairly broad subsection of this. And your thoughts?
I think it's all good.
I think so.
Good luck with your exams. I hope you found that very, very useful. Don't forget that there's a poll there that we'd really like you to do. Hopefully you found this session valuable. Steve and I have had a great time delivering it, most fun. So we've got a couple more coming up at the end of the month. So hopefully we'll see you back again for admin and for tester.
Excellent. And it's the both of us again.
It is.
Ah.
All right. Thank you, and I'll say goodbye from
me. Wonderful. Bye from me as well.